And one of the most marvelous examples of this spirit is a monk, or I'd rather call him a hermit and poet, by the name of Ryokan, who lived between 1758 and 1831. A man who is extraordinary in all the annals of sagehood and sanctity, for the reason that everybody loved him. I don't think he had any enemies at all, and this is really a very remarkable achievement. After all, it's so easy to be so holy that you're a challenge to the world, and that everybody feels uncomfortable in your presence, feels accused by your sanctity and given a bad conscience, and a result of that you get loathed, you make all sorts of enemies, and finally you get crucified. But it's really a very remarkable achievement indeed. To be all that, and lovable too, to be without enemies, the friend of everybody, and yet involving absolutely no compromise with one's integrity and honesty. Such a man was Ryokan, really marvelous. And many, many stories are told about him, and I think these anecdotes about him describe his personality more delightfully than anything I could say by way of a character analysis or comment in that fashion. First of all, it must be understood that the Myokonin, or a type of person like Ryokan, is one who has truly become again as a child. He's not senile, he's not in second childhood in that sense, but a person who is really full of a genuine wonder for life, who has so accepted himself, so let go of himself, is so not pretending to be anything, who gives himself no airs and graces, that he can relax and be perfectly natural. And so the story is told that one day Ryokan was going along begging his food, and he met a friend who invited him to spend the night at his home. Well, in the room where he stayed, there was a picture of a tiger hanging on the wall. And Ryokan looked for a long time at the picture, and was so intrigued by it that after a while he came to feel that he himself was a tiger. And he fell to the floor, and all running around on all fours, he growled at the tiger in the picture. "Ah," he said. And the tiger seemed to look at him and answer him. Ryokan again shouted, "Ah, ah, ah." And the tiger seemed to answer and appeared to be going to approach him. And Ryokan, getting a great deal of fun out of this game, repeated it many times. But just then, a maid of the house appeared and was quite astonished when she saw the priest on the floor. For a moment, she didn't understand what had happened and was very frightened. And then she recognized him. "Oh, Ryokan-sama, so it is you who frightened me so much. What are you doing there?" Startled by her voice, Ryokan stopped his game of imitation and shamefacedly spoke to her on his knees. "Oh, did you see what I was doing?" he asked. "You did? Oh, that annoys me very much. But, good maid, please keep it a secret. Otherwise, I won't know what to do, for people will think I'm crazy." And then there's another story, which tells of a servant boy who came to the little hermitage where he lived in the mountain, bringing a letter from one of his friends. And just at that moment, Ryokan was absorbed in trying to juggle his begging bowl on the top of a pole. When the messenger called out and delivered his letter, Ryokan stopped his juggling for a brief interval, glanced over the letter, and wrote his answer. The bearer made his departure, and Ryokan resumed his play. His bowl, time after time, slipped down to the floor, but again and again he'd set it up on top of the pole. Many hundred times did he struggle to accomplish this feat. And after some time the messenger returned. Ryokan was so engrossed in his play that he felt annoyed at this interruption and did not pay any attention to his visitor. Well, the boy waited for some time and finally called out in a loud voice, "Ryokan-sama, look here, what does this answer mean? My master is angry with me, and has ordered me to ask you to take back the letter you wrote before and give me your real answer. Please do so." Ryokan then had pity on the intruder and opened the letter he had written only a short time before. And what was his surprise when he read, The bowl turns round and round. He broke into laughter. Oh, dear me, excuse me, I've made a mistake, he exclaimed. He then wrote another letter. But as his mind was filled with thoughts of the bowl and its play, the answer didn't come easily. The great delight of Ryokan was playing with children in the village, where he went down to beg his food. And one fine autumn day, when he was going quietly through the village, he was suddenly disturbed by the sound of a voice, apparently coming from a persimmon tree. And turning his eyes to the place where the sound came from, he discovered a boy clinging in great fright to the topmost branches and crying for help. Oh, wait a moment, my boy, he said. I'll help you down, and then I'll pick some of the fruit for you. Ryokan brought the boy safely to the ground and then began to pick the coveted fruit. He plucked one persimmon and was about to hand it to the child when he decided that it would be well to taste it first in order to give away the very best. The first persimmon was therefore thrust into his own mouth. Mmm, how sweet, he exclaimed. He picked another and again stuffed it into his mouth. Mmm, good. Again and again, persimmons found their way into his mouth, accompanied by the exclamation, Mmm, sweet, how sweet. Meanwhile, the boy was waiting with the open mouth at the foot of the tree, growing more desperate every moment. Ryokan, lost in rapture over the persimmons, had entirely forgotten him. Only when the boy shouted out did Ryokan come to himself. Oh, dear me, he said, pardon me, do forgive me. I shall pick the best for you now, the very best of all, and as many as you like. Saying this, Ryokan dropped persimmons to the boy, one by one, all red and very sweet. And then there was once someone who told him that if you picked up money on the road, it made you feel very happy. So one day, as he was travelling back to his hermitage, he thought he would try it and see what it was like. Accordingly, he took some of the coins which he had begged from the villagers and let them drop to the ground. He then picked them up, one by one. But though he did this many times, he didn't experience any particular feeling of joy. I can't understand it, he said. They tell me that it is pleasant. Surely they wouldn't deceive me. He tried it again and again, but always without any result. In the process of dropping and picking up his money, he gradually lost all he had in the grass. For a long time he had to search for the money, but he found it at last. And then with a cry of joy he exclaimed, Ah, I understand now. To find money is certainly a delight. And once, when he was invited to stay in the home of some friends, they had to go out. And they asked him to watch the house, and he got kind of sleepy. A cat was going to sleep on his lap, and suddenly he heard a funny noise. He thought it was the cat. There was the cat asleep on his lap. What was that sound? He stole quietly to the paper screen which separated the veranda from his room and peeped through it with childish curiosity. And there in his room, he saw a shabbily dressed man searching in a chest of drawers and taking clothes out of it. Uh-oh, he's a sneak thief, thought Ryokan. Of course, Ryokan didn't want a thief to take clothes from his friend's house. So he made up his mind to frighten the robber and drive him away. He therefore crept into the room and stood behind the thief. And the robber, utterly ignorant of this, went out of the room with a package of clothes and hastened into another room to look for more. And Ryokan followed stealthily, stepping always about 10 feet behind him. And when the robber turned to the left, he also quickly went to the left. And if the thief turned to the right, Ryokan did the same, always just behind him. Another slight turn brought the robber almost in Ryokan's direction, but the priest was so quick that the thief didn't see him. It seemed to Ryokan as if he were playing a game of blind man's buff. So absorbed did he become in the game that before he knew it, the thief had slipped away with a stolen package. The priest suddenly came to himself and realized what a serious mistake he had made. But his concern was not so much over the lost things. His heart was full of pity for the thief, as he thought of his shabby clothes and his sad face. Late in the evening, when the family returned and were full of dismay when they saw what had happened, but Ryokan just sat in silence and smiled as usual. And then, among his written effects was found this curious little document. It just said, favorite things, cotton cap, towel, paper, fan, money, ball, and marbles. Necessities, bamboo hat, gloves, stick, bell. Things for travel, some clothes, an oil paper cape, a bowl, and a bag. Don't forget to read this before starting, otherwise you will suffer from want. He liked to smoke, too. He was very fond of tobacco, and he always had a shabby old skin tobacco pouch which he kept his tobacco in. Very often it was empty. Then he would go out on the streets with his tobacco pouch tied at the end of a long string down his back. People knew at once what he meant when they saw the pouch dangling behind him and would hasten to fill it with tobacco. Among other things, Ryokan was very famous as a calligrapher. His handwriting was greatly prized. And there was a barber to whom he used to go to be shaved, who very much wanted a specimen of his writing to hang on a kakemono, a hanging scroll on his wall. But Ryokan just wouldn't give it to him. Well, one day, in the middle of shaving his head, the barber stopped and left him half shaved and said, "Now, I won't go on and finish shaving unless you give me the piece of writing I want." So immediately, Ryokan wrote it for him. And then the barber finished shaving him. The barber couldn't read. And some days later, when somebody who could read came into his shop, said, "Why, this inscription is incomplete. There's a word missing." So next time Ryokan came by, the barber said, "But you didn't write the full inscription." "Oh, no, I know," he said. "I didn't write the full inscription because you didn't shave all of my head. The missing word, you will find I've written the same inscription but put the missing word in twice. At the home of an old widow who always gives me extra bean curd when I need it." Such, by anecdotes, is the temper of a man who is profoundly at home in the world and difficult to think about, difficult to talk about, because to praise such a character is to tempt one to imitate him, and one can only imitate him to imitate him, and one can only imitate him by not doing so at all, but by being just completely oneself.